Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that stayed positive for 2 years, but now we finally bent to the pressures of society. I am your host, David Lloyd, and on this
Wait, stayed positive for how long?
It's been 2 years.
I don't know, I've definitely talked about mobile games on this show before, and I don't recall it always being positive.
But the topic of the episode wasn't specifically negative.
Okay, I gotcha.
We have our moments.
We have our moments, that's right. So I'm your host, David Lloyd, and on this episode, yes, our specific topic is RPGs we did not enjoy, and we are going to discuss why we gave up on them. Some we won't touch again with the 10-foot pole, but others we're willing to give another shot, so we'll be listing a few of our personal opinions and then just explaining why they didn't click for us. But before we get into the discussion, let's see who's on the show tonight. So I call him the Noah of RPGs, since he's always able to keep his head above the flood of new releases. NWR Reviews editor and master RPG juggler, Jordan Rudick.
I need to make a list of all the names you've given me on the podcast over the last few months, David, because I need to add all of these to my resume. It's important when I inevitably apply for a new job in this economy that I've got these listed somewhere.
I've got the Willy Wonka of RPGs clocked in the chamber one of these days.
I was going to say, keep them fresh.
I keep waiting for that golden ticket, you know, but just never seem to open enough chocolate bars. I guess I can't even eat the bloody chocolate bars. So if I don't get a golden ticket, I get nothing. But
that's right. And also with us, a gentleman who has so far successfully fought the daily urge to get a PlayStation, despite all signs from the universe telling him otherwise.
He's the
better half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, Casey Gibson.
It's been an uphill battle. You just got to take it one day at a time, and you know. Keep on the grind.
Buy Final Fantasy VII Remake. Buy it.
I need to like find a PS4. I need to talk my sister into getting a PS4, and then I just conveniently borrow it or something for, you know, a month.
Casey, if in the next 2 weeks we haven't convinced you to buy a PS4 or a TV, I'm just gonna ship one to you, dude. Like, I feel bad. Like, you gotta have one of these things. We're pestering you so much. So,
well, I think the TV would be a better investment. Because it would be a 4K, right? And PS5, I'm assuming, right? I know the Pro plays, it's not like native 4K, right? It's like some sort of BS.
I think it's like an upscaled 4K.
But I think the 5 will probably be 4K native, I'd imagine.
Gotta be.
But yeah.
At least games developed for it.
And sure. Like I said, man, there's like a 55-inch 4K for like $350. And it's a Samsung. Ugh.
You know, that seems like a really good deal. You could also buy a PlayStation 4.
And you'd still have money left over. You get two TVs and a PS4 and some games.
Get a TV for
every
room.
Could do is you could tell the salesman, you go, look, I'll buy this TV if you throw in a PS4, and if you really twist my arm, I'll even buy a Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Don't get too close to Twist's arm, though, because, you know, if you're not, yeah, not safe to do that right now.
You gotta keep the distance. Yeah.
Twist his arm with a rope.
Yes.
A 6-foot rope. And rounding out the panel, a gentleman who probably has the exact opposite opinion of his PlayStation right now, after crashing multiple times during his playthrough of Final Fantasy VII Remake, owner of Nintendo World Report, Neil Ronahan.
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving Final Fantasy VII Remake. However, I'm realizing that this is probably going to be the last game that I play on my PS4 before it bursts into flames. Without getting into too much detail, there is some recurring error code that seems to be popular enough on the PlayStation 4 that there's a lot of Google literature out there on it. And it's basically, you have to try to initialize your system, and if that doesn't fix it, then it's basically just always going to happen and just keep on randomly crashing. And potentially eventually stop working altogether. So I am racing against the clock. I'm about, I think, 12 hours into Final Fantasy VII Remake. So I just need to hold out for like another 20. And hopefully I can make it to freedom. If not, then I might be rooting for an Xbox One port in a year. Or a PlayStation 5 or Xbox One Series X port in a year.
Well, it's definitely announced. It's just whether you want to wait that long, I guess.
Yeah, because I don't think it's coming to any other system for, I think it's a year exclusivity on PlayStation 4.
I want to know, like, when PS5 launches, like, are they going to do something special with this game? Are they going to, like, directly re-release it? Is it going to be some kind of patch for PS4 owners? Will the PS4 game just work out of the box? Like, I'm very curious what they're going to do with this, because it's obviously the tent poles for 2020, right? Like, they can't just ignore
it. It might
console.
Be the tent pole for 2020, yeah, that, the way things are going.
True.
If I had any bet about how Square Enix has operated as a company for a very long time, you won't be able to play this on PlayStation 5 when you buy a $60 new version of the game next April.
Mm.
Yeah, we could see it.
I overall have a negative view on PlayStation 5 backwards compatibility, and I don't think that Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to be a game that will be day one backwards compatible. That being said, I hope I'm wrong.
Hopefully they have a day one version available for me, though. A PS5 version. I don't care. I'll pay
the
$60.
The only person
there.
Happy one about it is you, Casey.
Yeah. I will laugh if this ends with you buying a PlayStation 4 instead of a PlayStation 5 in November.
Yeah. Yeah, there's none around. I'm like, screw it. I waited long enough.
Yeah.
And you probably get a sweet deal.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jordan and I will have you worn down at some point in the coming months. We'll see.
Well, I mean, it's my goal of April is not only to finish all these RPGs, but to also make sure Casey has spent his stimulus as a stimulus to his living room.
Yeah. Well, that like, was part of the Casey, argument. I'm like, the whole point is to put it back into the economy, right? I mean,
yeah.
I'd only be doing my civic duty.
Patriotic duty.
You should get Final Fantasy VII Remake, though. I could definitely poke some holes into that game, and I will when we record an episode on it in about 2 weeks. But, like, yo, man, you should play Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I know.
It's a damn good video game.
It looks, and look, imagine how good it would look on a beautiful, brand new 55-inch 4K. Ooh.
Samsung
I'll be right
is a really
back,
good
boys.
Brand. It's very reliable. I've had a lot of good Samsung TVs in the past. Casey, I'll tell you one thing just before we get onto the drinks here. I actually upgraded myself from a 40-inch TV to a 55 in my kind of office game room. It made a world of difference. Like, the 40-inch is fine, but the 55 fits the room like perfectly. And this was again, going from like a standard HD TV going to 4K. There's a lot of good Netflix stuff in 4K. Some of their newer Netflix original programming is 4K. And then, yeah, but seeing Remake in 4K, oh, man, like it's next level, dude.
Well, I've got like the 40-inch Sony Bravia, and it's I got that in 2013, I think, and it's still like an amazing picture, but yeah. I just wish
Sony. I mean,
bigger.
Sony TVs just last forever. That's the thing about them, right? They're super, super durable, right? So that TV could last you another 5 years easily, but... The thing is, TVs are so cheap now that you can do a massive upgrade for a fraction of what you paid for that Sony TV, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, and yeah. Then
well,
it would just
you could use a new computer to monitor, couldn't you, Casey? So you just slap that 40-incher on your desk.
Well,
and
it's funny.
You can pick up a 55.
I stole the little TV from our bedroom for my second monitor, so it would probably go in the bedroom. So then that way, Caitlin has a TV to watch when we're recording.
I just want to, just because I just set this up myself, I set up a second monitor. I brought out, I had an old
game changer,
a widescreen monitor. And so I've got my normal monitor is 32 inch. It's pretty good. But I've set up, I don't know if it was a 27 or 29 widescreen monitor. And I've set that up in portrait mode. So I've kind of swiveled it around.
You could
so
read
I've got
the
my
chat.
One. It's great, actually. Like, I can read the chat. I can see the stupid pictures that you guys post. But for me, for marking papers, it's a godsend, because now I can put the assignment on my second monitor. They sound like the essay questions or the prompts or whatever it is, or if my students are summarizing an article, I put the article on the left side, and then I'm marking on my main screen on my right side. So this makes the work so much easier. I feel more productive, you know, like, yeah, second monitor is a total game changer here, so I'm really happy to have it now.
It really is. Oh. So here's my sad story. So at like pretty much everybody else in the world right now, I'm working from home, but without getting into too much of my day job, I got furloughed this week. Last week I bought a monitor because I have a little tiny work laptop, and I was like, oh, I could use a second monitor, it'll help everything out with work. And then I got furloughed, so I don't need that monitor for work. However, right now, I have this giant, like, 25-inch monitor next to my already pretty big screen on my laptop. It's probably, like, an 18-inch screen laptop. I'm living the life. I can look at my audio levels. I can look at the script. I can look at that weird image that came up in the chat.
It should be law.
I got another
dual screens, yeah. Dude. Dual monitors. Yeah. It's just... oh yeah, I've got like I got my 27 and like a 24, and it's just oh game changer.
All right, we better get back on topic here, Jordan. So why don't you kick us off with the drinks for
tonight?
Yeah,
no problem. So last week I had a Lone Tree cider. That was the apple cranberry. It was pretty good. 5.5% alcohol. I enjoyed that one. But we're still getting through the variety pack here. So I think we've got maybe like one or two of each flavor left. So I wanted to try the apple pear. I gravitate towards pear flavored things because I feel like as a kid, I used to love getting, you know, pears and syrup, like that's kind of fruit cup, or very rarely you'd get pear juice. I don't even see pear juice anymore, but I really like pear flavored things. I find it's a rare thing to come across those nowadays. But the apple pear cider is very nice, actually. Like the cranberry, it's got, you know, a very kind of the fragrance of that side fruit is very strong, but the taste is a little bit sweeter than the cranberry, I think, kind of naturally, right? Cranberries are more tart, but the pear is sweeter, so this is a good one. Give you the description on the can here. We believe the old ways are still the best. We start with genuine cider apples from old growth orchards deep in BC's Okanagan Valley. The addition of ripe BC pears make for a luscious, mouthwatering finish. We know you'll taste the difference. I like the idea that the fruit is from BC. I always like to support local, so it's definitely a cider brand I would purchase again. My wife's been drinking. I've been kind of getting into cider a little bit more, and everybody's drinking more right now. So I think we're trying to be a little bit more adventurous. You know, try new things at the liquor store whenever we pop by. And like Neil, you were saying before we started recording, like, you know, the weekly liquor store trip. It's kind of like that here now too. Everyone seems to pop by. During the week, Sundays, our liquor stores around me are closed now. And they've got reduced hours during the week. But happy to try these new ciders. But Lone Tree, it seems like a good brand. I think overall it's a little bit more dry than something like, I can't remember if it's Growers or something like that. There's some other sweeter brands. But the Lone Tree is not a bad one. If you're into ciders and you see Lone Tree, looks like it's a BC brand. But I'm not sure if they are shipping or serving those in other parts of Canada or the US. But not a bad one.
And Casey, why don't you follow that up?
Well, as always, I'm pretty boring here. It's getting pretty late, and I got work in the morning, but I got a nice big old glass of H2O, and I had a double. I went back-to-back cups of coffee earlier to give me the energy to stay up here. So, but yeah, got to stay hydrated, you know?
Casey, you know, everyone has this question on their mind after listening to us last episode. What happened? Did you get a new coffee pot?
I did, yeah, yeah. Well, okay. It took a few days, so, yeah. What was that? We recorded. Is that Saturday night, right?
Yeah,
Saturday. Yeah, it wasn't that.
Yeah,
long
so ago. Easter, like Walmart was closed apparently. Mm-hmm. Weird. So yeah, I didn't get a new one until like a couple days later. I had to make some stops at the gas station, which you hate to do, you know. Obviously, mm-hmm. Trying to not go out too much, but yeah. But yeah, got a fresh new pot, and it is it does the job.
So just,
I think we should play a new game called "See What Casey Can Balance His New Coffee Pot On."
Yeah, yeah, the new hot.
You
YouTube
should balance
series.
It on a PS4.
Yeah, on Neil's
just
PS4.
See how that would work.
Just don't try. Don't. Whenever you're making coffee and you're handling your coffee pot, don't think, how can I spite Jordan? What can I say? What can I type? What can I type in a chat room to piss him off? Like, it's just it's not worth it. You know?
I deserved
it. It's not worth it.
Well, for my drink this week, so I was in the grocery store, and whenever there's a Beer Awards label sticking on the front, it always catches my eye. So I grabbed this one, having
one
no idea what
suckers,
it was.
You're one of those suckers, huh?
Yeah. Well, this was a good one, but it's called Urbach from Veruden. It's one of their signature beers. So this is a 9.5er. It's a strong amber, and let me tell you, it doesn't take long to realize this is, it's going to be strong. I poured it out, brought it up to my face, and the smell alone could knock you out. It was like it is strong. So this one is the way that it's made is it's actually aged in old Jamaican rum oak barrels. So it's got a little bit of that rum to it, a little bit of flavor there. But yeah, it's really it's good though. It's when you drink it down, like you can feel, if you had coronavirus in your nose, it'll be burnt right out, let me tell you. because it's got some heft. You feel it everywhere in your body when you're drinking that one.
The rum would make sense, considering you said that the smell or the scent is very powerful. If it's being aged in those rum barrels, I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you can tell it's pretty close to double digits in alcohol by being on the other side of the room, because it doesn't take long. And Neil, why don't you wrap up our drinks?
So I was playing Final Fantasy VII Remake.
No,
I came across
you've played that?
A weird item in the game. It was a juice bomb. I guess you can use it in the game against a boss or something. But it turned out to be a beer from Sloop Brewing, which I'm not that familiar with them. I believe they are New York State, I think Hudson Valley area. It's a juicy, hazy IPA. It's got low bitterness and late hopping that showcase the citrusy, juicy notes of American hops. A blast of tropical aroma is followed by resiny and balanced flavor. Juice Bomb features all the aspects and nuances of full hop flavor, not just bitterness. It's an IPA for real hop lovers, and is pretty effective against the Airbuster.
Hold on, is this an actual beer, or this is a beer from the game?
It's an actual beer. Okay. I grabbed it because I'm like, that sounds like an item for
both. It really does. It's great.
Sounds like a beer that Jordan would be willing to jump on if he had any around him.
I definitely would. Like, it has the word juice in it, so you know I'm all over that. So, although, yeah. Neil, anytime is, you come, I mean, on, you always got the fruit beers, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm about halfway through it, and I had some over the weekend. And it does have, it has a nice, it is that mixture of, like, the bitterness of an IPA with the nice tropical taste.
Now, if only they had a decaf, like Jordan, you know, he'd lose his gourd.
Oh, I'd have already bought him out. I would have bought out the whole store. You know me.
So I also do have a slightly related soda chat. So at my liquor store runs, they had a Dr. Pepper and cream soda.
Oh,
and
no.
And a cherry vanilla Coke. That the cherry vanilla Coke was kind of, I mean, it's what you'd expect. It was vanilla Coke with a cherry flavor.
Yeah.
However, the Dr. Pepper cream soda was really interesting.
That does sound interesting.
What color? Yeah, what color was it?
It was still like Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
Like
still
a
black,
dark,
still
like
brown,
the,
dark
the
brown.
Dr. Pepper darkness.
Yeah.
And I mean, it like once again, it's exactly what you describe. It's Dr. Pepper mixed with cream soda, yeah. But it kind of give it. Whereas I feel like Dr. Pepper sometimes has a little bit, not like a bitterness because it's still filled with sugar. But the cream soda gives it like a much more like sweeter aftertaste.
Yeah.
I've gotten, as I like, at first I just got one because I saw it and was like, well, I gotta try this shit. Every time I've gone back to the liquor store, because it's like they have like the I mean, it's just like a regular, like, you know, 20-ounce bottle of soda or whatever. Every time I, like, you know, grab my six pack, my bottle of wine or whatever, I go and I'm just like, all right, well, there's two there. I'm just gonna grab both of them and save them for later. They've been my, like, okay, I want something sweet and caffeinated to get me through playing Final Fantasy VII Remake late at night.
I was going to say, I wonder how many times Neil's going to say Final Fantasy Remake tonight. It's like subliminal message, like that's all I could think about going to bed. I'm like, oh, Final Fantasy.
Yeah. What I want is Casey to wake up halfway through the night with his phone in his hand. And he just comes
confirmed
just enough to hit
He just buys it without even knowing it. Just shows up on his door.
Oh, that'd be a great surprise. Come home to a 55-inch and a PS4. Like, what the heck happened?
Casey, can you give me Caitlin's email address for a completely unrelated matter, please?
he's just too nervous to ask. Just do it.
Yeah. Just going to see what she thinks about certain video game consoles, that's all. Certain TV sizes. Okay, so one last unrelated tangent before David loses it. I'm eating wine gums. They don't have alcohol in them, but when you open up a package of wine gums and you take a whiff, it almost knocks you on your ass. Like it's probably the same kind of thing, same kind of feeling that David had when he took a kind of deep breath in of his beer. I opened up this wine gum. It's a fairly big package, 315 grams. And yeah, I almost fell off my chair. It was a lot. Am I an old man for liking wine gums? Like, my dad likes wine gums, but now I like them too.
I will be honest. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, me either. I've never heard of one of those.
Save it, help. Help me.
Is this a Canadian
Yeah,
thing?
I know. I have an idea of it. Yeah. I don't know if it's Canadian or not, but I know what he's talking about.
I was thinking
about.
Like okay. a gummy.
Like, yeah, they are.
Like
they're
a gummy
okay,
barrel.
So
gummy
candies. They're United Kingdom.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, yeah. So yeah. We have them here, but...
Okay, like, I know of what you talk. I've just never heard them. Like, I've heard that, like, gumdrops are kind of my closest reference.
Yeah, they're not as sweet as gumdrops. They have like, a bitterness or a tartness to them, I guess. Yeah. They're not nearly as sweet.
Yeah, it looks like they're most prominently in the UK, Australia, Canada, Ireland, South Africa.
Gotcha. Okay, well...
That makes sense that if it's got a bitterness to it, that it came from the UK.
Depending on local laws or manufacturer's practices, packages may bear a specific statement that the candies contain no wine.
Yeah, my package says that on the back.
I learned something new.
Well, speaking of leaving a bitter taste in our mouths, I think it's time for Casey to kick off the RPGs we're not going to touch with the 10-foot pole again.
Oh, man. Okay, so originally, right... Neil had mentioned that maybe a certain game of high praise among the crowd here might be one of his games. So I was going to joke around and say Chrono Cross, but but I've actually never played Chrono Cross, so that's
I think you should.
Is that one on?
You might not like
is that PS1
but I think
or
it'd
PS2?
Be a fun game to talk about.
PS1.
PS1.
I do have a PS1.
It's a late one. Yeah.
But no.
I'll be honest, I think you could still buy a $10 like brand new copy from Square's website.
Yeah.
I love when they have
those
sales.
They must have a ton in the warehouse.
I bought one like a year ago. I have two copies of Chrono Cross.
That ain't coming off that catalog until they're sold out,
damn
it.
Yeah.
But no, I am going to be talking about Ni No Kuni 2 as a game that I won't ever play again. I know David could definitely back me up on this one. We jumped in. Like, head first.
You guys were stoked.
Yeah, we were super stoked.
We were stoked.
Now, I believe you hadn't played the first one at that point, right?
No, my stokeness was based off your stokeness.
Okay, and my stokeness was based off, like, everyone's excitement everyone loving the first one and, you know, sort of being like, oh, well, I've got a PS4 now. This game looks cool. Like, let's just do it. And I got a cool little keychain pre-order bonus. Which I probably still have.
Well,
somewhere.
Lofty is pretty cool.
I've got it too. I've got the
game.
Chain.
The game might suck, but Lofty.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that was probably the coolest thing of the game. But no, I mean, right off the bat, I remember really digging the visuals. You know, obviously, it sort of has that Studio Ghibli, even though they didn't work with them on this one. That was the partnership for the first game, and they were not part of it for the second one. But I guess they sort of had like a basis of what to work off of because you're in, you know, Ding Dong. Delhi, right? Ding Dong Dell.
Ding Dong Dell.
Yeah, yep. Is like the area there. And I remember I was like,
I mean, it's still level 5. Level 5 just has a Ghibli style to them.
They do.
Sure. And yeah, the first area you're visiting, like, I was like, man, this game, it's beautiful. Like, it's amazing, you know. I was playing the game, you know, the actual battle system action RPG. I was like, all right, definitely a little easy, but, you know, it's early on. I'm sure it'll maybe get a little more complex or something. But man, it sure didn't. it just
kept tossing out more combat stuff. Like there was the action RPG, but then there was like a real time strategy game with like the armies, and then there was like a castle or
the town
building simulator,
and that was the biggest. Oh my goodness, you sort of hear that and you're like, okay, this is gonna be cool, and then like it was the lamest. Like city building aspect, like they're like, oh, you could put,
yeah, it was pretty
oh, you
bad.
Want to build a castle? Like, well, here is where you're gonna put it. You know, it was like, it felt like there was not a lot of like personal, like making it yours. You know, like it was very cookie cutter.
No, just give me money, we build.
Yeah, it just unenthused about any of it. You know, and I don't know. It just was, like I said, I don't know if we built it up. Or maybe I built it up to be really exciting, but I don't know, just the battle system was so bland and boring, and then that just put a big damper on everything, because the game still looks visually really nice, you know, I love that style, but I don't know, I just, super boring.
Do you remember where you dropped out?
I can't remember offhand, but I definitely put, you know, a solid amount of hours into it. It wasn't like, you know, we played like an hour or two, because it is a pretty long game.
Yeah, I don't remember the time I put in, but I remember the point because it was right after the casino, that where you're. So we went to the casino, and then Lofty did this thing with the boogers, which was hilarious.
Yep, I remember that.
But yeah, but then we ended up going back to the country or whatever that they decided they were going to build in the middle of nowhere and do that castle building, and then I think that's where I ended up just being done, like that we went back and then we were supposed to go to the next country or something, but I was working on building up the castle and then I just completely lost interest.
Yeah, I definitely made it a bit after that, you know, I don't exactly remember where, but yeah, I remember doing that sort of town building and yeah, I was like, ooh, like, man, this just seems like a complete waste of time, you know what I mean? And then I was like, well, I'm not having fun out in the world doing battles either, you know? So it's just one of those, like, yeah. And then, like, we were talking about it, and I'm like, well, I'm not the only one. Like, David isn't enjoying this either. So it's like, I'm not even going to bother, you know, pushing forward with it anymore. But since that point, I have gone back and played Ni No Kuni, the first one. And honestly, like, that game's better, but I think it's a little overrated for sure, you know? But
so I have not touched two at all because I think it was a little bit like I heard you guys bounce off and was like, don't need to pay attention to that one. I played a little bit of the first one and like I thought it looked absolutely stunning. It is. But like it kind of just gives me to an overarching thing and not to look ahead to what Jordan's going to talk about a little bit. What the hell happened to level 5?
Yeah, it sort of fell off the deep end.
Like they used to be like, I mean, just looking back, I mean, they worked on, you know, what was the first Dragon Quest? Yeah, they worked on Dragon Quest 8, 9. Like those games are both tremendous. Like the Leighton games were all really good. Inazuma 11 wasn't totally my bag, but like that was an interesting series.
Fantasy Life was that was a cute little fantasy, game.
Yeah, Fantasy Life was good. Yeah, Fantasy Life is probably one of my favorite 3DS games, and then it just seems like Yo-Kai Watch was just the beginning of the end for them as an interesting developer.
Did they do Destiny Connect as well? No, that wasn't them.
No, that's just like a ripoff.
What have they done recently?
This.
Yeah, Ni No Kuni. Right.
They're still doing... There was a Yo-Kai Watch game that came out on Switch last year.
Right, yeah.
That'll probably come to America sometime in the next year or two, it seems. I mean, and Snack World.
Yeah, Snack World, that's right.
That came out in Japan in like 2018, but it came out in North America and Europe earlier in 2020.
Yeah.
But it's like it seems like they just kind of like I think they're bad now. I used to get excited or at least interested in all of their games, and much like I mean I guess Jordan should just talk about your game.
Yeah.
Just to put a bow on level 5, Yo-Kai Watch 4 was the last game that released.
Yeah.
They have a Yo-Kai Academy game coming out for PlayStation 4 and Switch. Supposed to be Q2 this year. They have a Ni No Kuni mobile game. So
there's an Inazuma 11 that keeps on getting delayed.
That's right.
Yeah, and then they have two other Switch games on the go. One's called Megaten Musashi, and the other one is a
mech game.
Yeah, and then Ushiro. They don't have any information on that one either.
Yeah. So Dark Cloud, like those were their first games. Dark Cloud's interesting at the very least. Mm-hmm. Like, I could probably give Yo-Kai Watch as another one of that won't play game. I actually like the first Yo-Kai Watch. It's the second one where it was just the same goddamn game again.
Yeah, I played the first one and the battle system was weird and I didn't love it, but there was enough charm to keep me pushing through.
Yeah. The writing was really good. And, like, the world was... So what they do in the second Yo-Kai Watch is it's basically just the same freaking game, but then there's a really good twist, time-traveling twist in the back half. That's the only redeeming quality of Yo-Kai Watch 2.
So, just for my experience of Ni No Kuni 2, like, I finished the game. It was a lot of hours, probably upwards of 35 or 40, I think. At the end, I think I was kind of chasing a few trophies as well. It doesn't have the heart of the first game, and I think that's the biggest problem. The first game, it grabbed me so kind of strongly in terms of the story and the characters and the storytelling. And by the end, I was just a mess. Like, I was a puddle of tears at the end of the first game. And the music is so good too. The second one, it just doesn't have that charm, that heart to it. It feels very safe. It feels, in terms of being a sequel, like, it doesn't really bring a lot of new things to the table. At least new things that are fun. The castle building or the town building sim is there's no depth to it. It's just watching numbers go up, watching timers go down. And then there's the real-time strategy portion is it's actually fairly hard at some points, and if you haven't like built up or hired the right people in your army, it can be really tricky. I don't think the second game is worth playing. I do still believe the first game is, especially if you're into like a more involved story. The combat of the first game, like the second game, I don't think it's a high point for either. At least the first game has a little bit of the Pokemon element of collecting little creatures around the world to fight for you. But the second game, I don't think it's worth playing. I think it's long, it's bloated, and it just doesn't have the same emotional depth that the first game has. So, Casey, I think it's a really good pick, actually. If anyone started it, they should probably just put it down, go to something.
And if you've been thinking about starting it, don't.
Yeah, don't bother.
Well, Neil's going to kick off the next one, and this one might be controversial to some of the listeners out there.
So I was going to go into this with Xenoblade Chronicles 2 or Persona 4 Golden because I'm a weirdo. But instead, I'm going to be just going to burn the 90s. I will never try playing Secret of Mana again. That is heralded as, I think, one of the best Super Nintendo RPGs, and that's Super Nintendo is probably one of the best consoles for RPGs. The one thing that I can say positively about Secret of Mana is I think the music is fantastic.
It's really, really
good. It's like, man, it's just a tremendous soundtrack. But that's it. My first experience with Secret of Mana, I remember kind of vividly. It was probably, I had two friends over. We were like, what can we play? Like, how about we play Secret of Mana? It's supposed to be a three-player RPG. This is probably like late 90s, early 2000s. We boot up Secret of Mana. We're all set. We had like a multi-tap set up and everything. We were ready to play, and you start single player for the first. I forget exactly how long we wound up getting to where the second player came in, and then we realized the third player wasn't coming in anytime soon, so we just didn't bother.
Yeah,
and that was my first experience with Secret of Mana, and I did, like, had a very negative experience. It's also like the writing is terrible in the localization for Secret of Mana as well. Like, maybe there was a charm to it, but it just didn't. It was just like mana, 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 mana. You're kicked out of the town. Screw you. Don't, like, leave. And everything's kind of weird and janky. Also, just the way text is displayed in that game is super off-putting. But I kept on hearing people talk about how much they love Secret of Mana. Grew up Secret of Mana. It's amazing. So I figured, all right, I'll try it again. On Wii Virtual Console, went back to it, got about an hour or two, and bounced off it. The Super Nintendo Classic. I believe that the Super Nintendo Classic came out either like right before or right after Ever Oasis, which is a game that is near and dear to my heart, that is made, that is the lead like designer of that game, or the director is I'm gonna double check this, Koichi Ishii, who he was the director of Secret of Mana, worked on the Mana series for like a decade, and then he formed Grezzo, which worked on Ocarina of Time 3D, Majora's Mask 3D, Link's Awakening, the remake. And he, Ever Oasis was being heralded as like, it's a return to Mana form. I don't know if this was before, or like I said, I don't remember if it was before or after Ever Oasis came out, but I was like, with how much I was excited for Ever Oasis, I was like, all right, Super Nintendo Classic, when that comes out, I'm going to try Secret of Mana again. I'm going to give it a real shot. Like, everybody says this game's a classic. I managed to like, kind of like inch my way forward to get maybe 4 or 5 hours into the game. And it was an absolute slog, and I had that moment that I feel like we will all have with every game that we're talking about here that Casey already described, where I'm just like, I'm not having any fun. And then I put it down, and I kind of like swore to myself, I'm like, I'm never going to bother playing this damn game again. The only positive postscript is that I played like 10 hours of Trials of Mana when the Collection of Mana came out, because despite the fact that like, I don't like Secret of Mana, I bought Collection of Mana immediately when it came out, because, E3 hype, and also I heard Trials of Mana was really good. And that was the only time that the Mana series has not completely let me down. because I think Trials of Mana is a much better game than Secret of Mana, and I can't wait to play the remake.
I think it's on your last point of buying the collection of Mana, I bought it too, but I was waiting for a physical copy, and I think it's very hard to pass up a compilation of role-playing games, because it's so seldom do we get
a
package of role-playing games all together, right?
I wanted to celebrate the fact that Square Enix did a localization of a Super Nintendo game like 20 years
ago. Yeah, for me, that's a big like, part of it.
It's so cool.
Because, yeah, totally. Like, hey, we understand you totally didn't have to go out, you know, I'm sure, you know, obviously you gotta, I don't know if they had like a translation set up somewhere or not where it was easy, but regardless, it probably was a risk more than anything. Like you said, like, oh, it's a 20-year-old Super Nintendo game. How many people are going to get excited about that? So as someone who was excited about that, you almost feel like you know, like, hey, we're going to support that, you know, and show you that you should do this more often. And I've done that a few times where, like, Nintendo, I forget the game. It's NES game. They released it for, I believe, the 3DS Virtual Console. Something castle, right?
A mysterious Marisonic castle.
So games like that, you know, where it's like, oh, like you totally didn't have to do this. That's super cool. Like, yeah, I'm gonna throw down
Sky,
you know?
Skipper.
Yeah, exactly.
Earthbound Beginnings.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I actually never bought Earthbound Beginnings because I just I knew I didn't want to play that. I know I had played like some like, you know, that like, because I think wasn't there a version of Earthbound Beginnings that like that there was basically an almost complete ROM. Mm. From that was basically what became Earthbound Beginnings when it came out. I think that circulated at some point.
Yeah, that could be.
Either way, at some point I played, you know, Mother NES and like realized I'm like, oh, this is like Earthbound if it was just way more of a basic ass RPG.
Yeah.
And so I did not buy that.
It's hard as hell because most of the time you're just playing with Nintan and you don't have the other party members to help you out. So it's really, really tough.
Yeah, I had the same take with Mana, where I didn't really like Secret of Mana, but I love Trials of Mana, and I don't know, like it just seemed like Trials of Mana was the things that I didn't like about Secret they had fixed in Trials, so I enjoyed it a whole lot more.
I think the story's a lot better.
Yeah, well, and the combat was annoying too because I found that in Secret of Mana a lot of times enemies would just appear off. You get close to the end of the screen and then you get hit by the enemy and it's like, well, where did he come from? Like this is irritating. Mm. And that seemed to happen a lot. So yeah, I got the collection as well and played them. Wasn't a big fan of Secret, but I enjoyed Trials a lot more.
What I didn't like about the combat of Secret of Mana, and I haven't played it in a long time, but I don't like the fact that it's meant to be an action RPG of sorts, but it almost forces you to play in a turn-based style, or there's so much waiting, right? You wait to charge up your sword attacks or your whatever weapon you're using as it levels up, as it powers up, and you get, you know, maybe go up to level 8 or something. You have to wait for that bar to charge, to do those charge attacks, right? Or even just your basic attack, you're waiting for your percentage to go from 1 to 100, and then you do your basic attack. Like, if you're going to do an action RPG, do an action RPG, but don't make people wait to attack.
Instead of Secret of Mana, you should play Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Neil, I mean, games we don't like. Games we don't like is the theme.
It did make me think, because I think that I think Final Fantasy VII Remake is actually, its combat might owe a little bit more to the Mana series than it does some other Final Fantasy games.
Sure, yeah.
Because it does have that little bit of, like, you have these basic attacks, you're waiting for things to charge, and it's an action RPG. Mm-hmm. It did make, like, I, as playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, it made me think of the Mana games a lot.
Well, the next game up on the list is one that we actually just touched on in the first discussion.
Yeah, I think we pretty much wrapped it up, so we don't need to talk too much about this one. this is a game, my theme for this episode, I wanted to bring up two 3DS games, because the 3DS is a console, like, I love it, obviously, I think all of us do. One I'm going to hang on to for a long time, and I've just got so many games downloaded on it, cartridges I've kept. This is one I've not kept, Yo-Kai Watch. I really like the visuals, like the way it looks. I've always liked the way level 5 games look. Even, Ni No Kuni 2, we mentioned, like, they've got a style to them that it's cartoony, it's a little bit anime, but it's always kind of very vibrant and colorful, and I like that. It's also, I like games that are set in kind of a contemporary modern setting. I mentioned that in the episode we did about video game worlds. I like the story. I especially like the side quests. I like how the side quests in Yo-Kai Watch, where you maybe have to bring a certain yokai to somebody, or you have to solve a puzzle with one of them, or, you know, go from A to B in a town and do something. I wish Pokemon had that. There are elements of Yo-Kai Watch that I'd like to see in Pokemon games, the town exploration. But it's the combat and the fact, the way that you acquire new yokai into your party, that I just can't stand those mechanics. They're so not like Pokemon, and I get, you know, you're trying to be your own property, you're trying to be different. But yeah, the combat is very touchscreen focused. And you don't even really control your creatures directly. You can tell them kind of who to target, but they're attacking kind of, you know, every so often. If they get knocked out, you have to kind of do a little mini game on the screen to wake them back up, to charge up their special attacks or to activate their special attacks. You have to do, maybe you have to spin a wheel on the bottom screen or do some other thing on the touchscreen of the 3DS. And I just couldn't stand doing that over and over again for every battle. It made them very cumbersome. Like, I mean, you guys know me. I'm a speed RPG player. I'm running through games as fast as I can. So if I have to stop and during the combat, break out my stylus, you know, draw a little picture on the bottom screen just to end the encounter. I don't like that kind of thing. So it kind of jives with the way that I like to play RPGs, where the combat, If it's not an important encounter, I want it to go over quickly. And even if it's a boss encounter, I want to try to speed run a little bit. I want to, you know, I'm not just sitting there, you know, playing it without taking any risks. I'm trying to go through as fast as I can. Like, if my characters die and I've got one more hit left, maybe I'm going to take that chance. In Yo-Kai Watch, you can't really do anything like that. There's also the fact that the way you capture new yokai to get them into your party is you try to befriend them. So you enter a battle with one of them and you try to feed them their favorite food. And after defeating them, there's a percentage chance that they'll join you. But it's very, very random. Mm-hmm. First, you have to figure out what food they like. And then you have to defeat them. And after you defeat them, the battle is over and maybe they join you. So it's not like Pokemon where the battle doesn't end until you either catch them or destroy them. In Yo-Kai Watch, you have to destroy them to see if they will join you. And I didn't like that mechanic. So those two things really rubbed me the wrong way. Just that lack of control, that lack of player agency, too much randomness, too much touchscreen. I don't care for that. And as long as the Yo-Kai Watch series is like that, I'm always just kind of going to look at it and kind of shrug my shoulders. It's not something I'm going to get into. Have you guys played much Yo-Kai Watch?
I mentioned it when we were talking about Ni No Kuni. I played the first one and kind of dug it for a lot of the reasons that you explained, and was kind of excited for the sequel. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the sequel is just basically the same freaking game outside of there is a pretty good time traveling twist in the end. And then I was completely like, I'm like, no, never again. And I've heard the third one, like, I know Alex Calafi, he was a big fan of the first two. We did like a joint review of the second one or something, because it was one of those
two versions.
Two,
right?
Versions.
Yeah.
I know we each played it, and he was way more positive on it than I was. And I think he recently played Yo-Kai Watch 3, which when he told me that, I'm like, did they do a fan translation? But no, they actually did release it in America, and I just forgot. And it seems like Yo-Kai Watch 3 did to him what the second one did to me, where it's just like you get through it and you're like, this is just kind of the same thing over again. Like, I love the concept of that world. And it's a shame that it seems like level 5 is hellbent on just kind of making it overly kid-friendly. Like, I think if you do look at something like Pokemon, and, you know, Pokemon has its issues, but I think Pokemon has done a much better job of kind of straddling the line between being approachable to children and still being appealing to all four of us. And I think Yo-Kai Watch fails at being appealing to more than just, you know, that limited child target audience.
Well, again, like, you look at the way that Pokemon are acquired, right? There's a strategy to it. You know, put your enemy to sleep or buy a better version of a Pokeball. You can kind of figure out there's almost a math or a calculus to catching all the creatures, finding out where they are. Do they show up, you know, during the nighttime or when it's raining or whatever? But in Yo-Kai Watch, I feel like They add that randomness to it, and I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's more kid-friendly. There's less strategy to it or something like that. But you think about the stats and things that Pokemon has, right? IVs, EVs, the competitive battling, online trading. Like, Yo-Kai Watch doesn't have any of those things. And Pokemon has gotten away with doing the same thing over and over again through every generation, just adding a few different creatures, because I think, yeah, you're right, Neil, it has that depth to it, which does make it appeal to a wider audience. But Yo-Kai Watch, if it's just kind of doing the same thing over and over again, it's like, okay, you know who you're going to sell to. I think the series does well in Japan, right? They've got anime, they've got manga. It is a property that will probably continue to work there. But bringing the games to the West, I don't know that they'll ever really be successful unless it changes, maybe in a dramatic way.
Yeah, I've never played Yo-Kai Watch, but you've convinced me never to bother.
Yeah, well, you play, even though you played Ni No Kuni too, because Casey told you to, and I'm telling you, don't play Yo-Kai Watch. So,
yeah,
that's right. So I'm going to listen.
Very good. What do you got, David?
So for me, like Neil pointed out earlier in the show, I'm no stranger to voicing my displeasure with games. And there's been a few that I've had strong opinions for on the pod, so I tried to stay with a game that I haven't really talked about lately, and I went with one that I don't necessarily think is a bad game, but it's more just not my cup of tea in any sense, and that's the one in particular that I'm talking about is Tales of Vesperia for the Switch, which I believe it was a remastered like definitive edition or something.
So
like
it's a,
that,
yeah, but... it was a 2008 Xbox 360 exclusive, which is why it was kind of a big deal that it was coming off of that. There was that era, Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey.
Dude,
also came.
I remember
on
the
Xbox.
Blue Dragon hype for sure.
Blue Dragon. I mean, Blue Dragon is not bad.
It's not bad. Good. It's not. I want to go back to it. I don't know if we've done an episode or
is it back compatible?
On Xbox One,
know, like,
but not PC. I think.
Oh, there is. Yeah. Because we looked. Because
we
it
were
was
looking
on sale.
At it, yeah.
Blue Dragon was on sale. So yeah, you can play it on Xbox One, but they don't. Okay. You can't play it on PC.
Maybe I should buy that on Xbox One, because I know Lost Odyssey was straight up just free on Xbox One at one point.
And Blue Dragon was like $1 or like $2. Like it was. They made it super cheap around that time, actually. So
yeah. So I was disappointed that one wasn't there, but. I can't imagine we'll be getting into a Tales game anytime soon, because I don't know, it just wasn't like the story was like, I enjoyed the story and the visuals were nice and the music was good, but the battles, like the battle arc, the action RPG mechanics, I had no enjoyment out of it. It felt like work. It just felt like every battle, I'm like, oh, I gotta fight again. Like, I didn't like the way the sequences went down. Even though I loved the little cat guy who talked and had a pipe. I think he was my favorite character, but I got pretty far into that game and then I was just done.
I think,
and it's funny too, because with my GameCube, I actually owned Tales of Symphonia at one point and was super psyched to play that because it was a two-disc RPG and never actually turned that game on.
Who are you, Perry?
So,
I know.
I enjoyed Tales of Symphonia. That came out in, 2003?
Yeah, I had that one for GameCube.
I know it was a GameCube. Like, I remember really enjoying that game, and every time I've tried to play a Tales game since then, I've always faded very fast. I feel like they're from that special sect of RPG where they're probably 15 to 20 hours too long at a minimum.
I feel that was definitely...
Because I remember Symphonia was so freaking
really,
long.
Really, really long.
Like, yeah, I wish it was just a one-disc GameCube RPG.
Well, that was the... Yeah. Like you said, that was like you'd wear how many hours as a you know, badge of pride. Oh,
yeah.
It was 40, 60,
we had
60,
way
80.
More time.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when that even was a thing for, like, Zelda, remember? Like, oh, the Zelda's only 20 hours, it's gotta be longer, Final Fantasy VII was the, you know, and, like, I remember that whole era.
Yeah, guess what? Ocarina of Time and Final Fantasy VII, you can probably beat both of those games in the amount of time it would take you to finish Tales of Vesperia.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Yeah, Tales, that's... yeah.
Because, like, I mean, that's the thing, it's like, I mean, that's, it's still kind of preposterous that, like, you know, my new favorite video game, Final Fantasy VII Remake, that is ostensibly the first part of the game, and it's longer, it's seemingly longer than if you were to, like, 100% Final Fantasy VII. Which is just, like, hilarious at the end of the day. And even Ocarina of Time, like, you can beat that game in, like, 20, 25 hours if you're taking your time. I think the last time I played it on 3DS, I was done that game in, like, 15.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like if I were to play any Tales game, even if it were to replay it, that's still taking me minimum 30 to 40 hours.
The funny thing about Zelda games is, though, once you know what to do, it's never going to take you as long, right? Because a lot of it, the first time you play a game, Zelda game especially, is you're gonna go places you shouldn't. You're gonna bomb things. There's no need to do that, right? Like the idea of getting lost in a Zelda game is kind of built into the experience, and I think it's one of the things you love about it. You know, it's funny, David, you bring up Tales of Vesperia, and the game's 60% off on the eShop right now, and I'm like, my finger is on the button to buy this game, not as a result of what you've said just now. Yeah, that's right. Like,
I'm putting it on Twitter. I'm going to prove him wrong.
It's not bad. It's not a bad game.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Don really liked it. I think it might be just a preference thing. I think I'm with you. I think my taste aligns. I think these types of action RPGs I don't like. But the game looks really cool. I think the cities look really neat.
Yeah.
I am interested in the story and the music. But yeah, I don't know. Here's my problem. An action RPG for 45 hours is a long time to do an action RPG style combat, right? When it's turn-based, you don't have the stress level. It's more the pacing is different. But to do, you know, kind of button mashing type combat across a 40-hour story, it's just like, God, that my thumbs are hurting just thinking about it. You know, If for an action RPG, I want it to be shorter, more compact, maybe more replayable or something like that. But I don't want it to be overly long. So knowing how long this game is gives me pause, even though 60% off is a damn good price for that game. But
it felt the combat felt dated too, though.
Yeah, well, of course it is.
Especially when you come off something like Nier Automata and you're going back to that and you're like, oh my gosh.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fair. So I'll wait for 75% then.
So I would recommend, if you have a hankering for a Tales game, just play Star Ocean First Departure R.
I thought you were just going to say, double check. Play Final Fantasy VII.
I mean, you could, but Star Ocean, I just double checked it because I remember, because I beat and reviewed that game, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
That game, it looks like main story on how long to beat is 20 hours. Like, it'll probably take you between 20 and 30. It's a way more reasonable length of a game, and it was the most fun I'd had with a game in that Tales lineage, because the story behind Star Ocean is that the first Tales game, Tales of Phantasia, was made by, you know, one team, and then they got in a dispute with Bandai Namco, or just Namco, as they were back in that time, and then they left and made a new team, Tri-Ace, that then worked with Square Enix to make Star Ocean.
I've had Star Ocean on my wish list for a long time. I think it's only been, you know, 10 or 20% off or something like that. But if it gets above 30, I'm definitely going to pick that up. I am excited to play that game. I'm a sucker for deals. I see like a game go from like 60 Canadian dollars to 20, 25. And I'm like, damn, that's a good price. But I'm definitely going to remain paused on it and probably look at it a little bit longer, David. But I'm glad you talked about it a little bit, because the time commitment right now, you know, I know we have more time, but there's also, it's the summer of RPGs still. You know, we still have Trials of Mana, Final Fantasy VII Remake to finish. And then by the time we're done with those, Trails of Cold Steel and Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition for people that are picking that up too. So it's hard to... I feel like I would just be adding it to my backlog because it's a good price, you know?
Well, the good thing is that after June, no other video games are coming out this year.
That's right. That's true. Yeah. At least not physically.
Well, Casey, how about you take us into the second phase, which is the RPGs that you didn't like initially, but if you had your arm twisted, you would you'd give it a second chance.
And we don't know what this is, because Casey didn't put it in the notes, so it's going to be a big surprise to all of us.
Yes, it is. This is going to be a game you guys are going to think I'm a madman. You're going to think I'm a madman.
It's just
too late. We already do.
This is a game I want to give a second chance to. It is known as one of the worst RPGs out there. Horrible. horrible.
Oh, no,
but here's
not.
The thing.
No, you're not.
I haven't played it in so many years that my memory is very foggy of what this game actually is, and I'm talking about Quest 64, baby.
Yo, man. Wait, is that a 90s RPG?
No, that's a 2000.
Oh, maybe.
Wait, yeah, no.
Is it 2000?
Yeah, that's probably...
I think it's early. That was like one of the first RPGs on N64.
Let's see.
I think it's, I mean, it's
June 1st, 1998, boys.
I win the bet. I said a 90s RPG.
You took a whole decade. I wanted one generation.
Well, he's a smart betting man, of course.
Yeah. No one fought me.
The Price is Right $1 strategy from you. Thank you.
So I've played Quest 64 like to completion back in the day.
My condolences.
I don't think it's complete garbage.
Get out of here.
I have played worse RPGs, my friend.
I know
friend.
The upgrade
because you have nothing to
weird.
Compare it to. It's the only N64 RPG.
It's the best
be fair,
N64 RPG.
That's right.
There's no question.
I mean, No. Ogre Battle still came out on N64. Paper Mario.
But yeah.
To be fair, around when I played Quest 64 was also when I played like Final Fantasy VII and got into Super Nintendo RPGs.
You had beer goggles on then, I guess.
And you still played Quest to completion? Like, play FF6 a third time, like...
But my thing is, okay, like, is Quest 64 on par with any Final Fantasy, even the shitty ones? Well, it's probably better than 2, but...
It's close.
Not by much. But it's more that, like, I think that Quest 64, just because if it's, like... Just the fact that, like, it was, like, the RPG on N64 for a couple years.
Yeah.
Like, I think it got this... horrendously terrible reputation, and I think it's more like a bad game with its heart in the right place.
Yeah. I remember all the Nintendo Power like features like pumping the tires on this game, like, hey, here comes the first big RPG. I think it might have even had a cover, but it had a cover issue, or if not, it had big features in at least one or two of the magazines, and they were blowing this game out like it was the second coming of Christ, and like the Final Fantasy VII of the N64, right? And then we rent the game, or I had a friend who bought it, I think, too. And then we play it together for a few hours. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like anyway, Casey, this is your game. We're taking it over here. Why would you give this?
The game story is set in Celtland.
Yeah.
So
no,
bad.
It's. I know that, like, upgrade your character, it's based off, like, what you use. So, like, to increase your HP, or your defense or whatever, you need to get, like, hit a bunch. So that seems sort of annoying. And, of course, it looks very plain and empty as far as the areas go. I remember getting lost in those damn woods back in the day.
Oh, yes.
And listening to that music, like, not like for hours on end, like, where the heck am I going? But, I just think for nothing more than an educational experience to have a definitive say on it from a, you know, an adult perspective.
I champion this. I think we should all play.
Oh, dude, I've suggested it. I would be down.
Casey's been pushing it for weeks.
Yeah.
Yo, Casey, I'm in
it's
your corner,
it's all part
man.
Of the plan.
I will just point out IGN's review. Said that Quest proves beyond a doubt that compelling RPG graphics are possible on a cart.
Well, there it is.
What?
No more truer words have ever been uttered.
Case closed. I guess we're playing it based on that one sentence. Like,
here's from Next Generation. In the end, Quest 64 proves the cartridge-based N64 can be a viable format for RPGs. However, while graphics and sound go a long way, the need for well-told stories and characters you care about has never been more apparent.
that's a good line, too.
I need proof that reviewer wasn't paid off.
Yeah.
I do remember...
There's kickbacks under the table there, I'm telling you.
You had that Final Fantasy II, like the, you know, attack and get hit to freeze your stuff, but then you also found like the different...
the elements.
Yeah. And, like, I remember that being kind of cool, because you could be like, all right, I'm going to, like, load up on fire. And there was kind of a strategy in that. Like, once again, not saying this is a great game, not even saying it's a good game. I'm just saying it's not as bad as everyone says it is.
Well, speaking of games that are not as bad as everyone says it is, go ahead, Neil, and give us yours.
This was a late game thing. So I've been thinking a lot about how, Final Fantasy VII Remake is ostensibly Final Fantasy XVI Like, let's get real. Yes. That's what that game is. We're not going to see Final Fantasy 16 for a very long time because they made Final Fantasy 7 Remake. So as much as I'm really enjoying specifically the combat system in Final Fantasy 7 Remake, which I've heard that it's way better than what the combat system is in Final Fantasy 15. But just as much as I'm enjoying this game, it makes me want to reconsider Final Fantasy 15, a game that I've played just a little bit of, but just bounced off it so hard and did not really enjoy my time with it back around when it launched, which was 2016. But I have a feeling when I get to the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, I'm just going to want to attack any Final Fantasy-related game. I've been wishing for like Final Fantasy 13 to come to Switch, because that's another game that I think gets... I don't think Final Fantasy 13 is one of the best Final Fantasy games. However, I think it's fine. Like, it's fine. But would play that game on Switch. And Final Fantasy 15, like, I kind of want to go back to.
Pocket Edition, baby.
Maybe the
Pocket Edition. Get off this podcast.
It's the only way to fly.
Yeah, maybe I'll try Pocket Edition, because I already own that, because it was on sale.
No, you bought it.
He got roped into it, too.
But I think that if I were to play this, I'd probably look for it on Xbox One and actually play the Final Fantasy 15, the nice-looking graphics version. I think I want to go back to this game.
I'm kind of curious about the improvements and changes that were made with all the DLC, right? You got a sizable amount of DLC, like a season and a half, basically. The individual chapters for the characters, and then the some of the villains or the antagonists got their own DLC chapters as well. Like, I'd like to go and play those eventually, but I don't want to spend a lot of money on it, because I don't really like the combat very much at all. And I think after playing Remake, it's going to be even harder to go back to that combat, you know?
Yeah.
I think I'm in the minority of those who love that game. I'm not an action RPG guy, but I got into that game. The combat, I will admit that the combat in Final Fantasy Remake is probably better than 15.
Probably?
I want to wait.
David, it so deftly combines the action and turn-based. You're pulling my chain here, right?
I mean, what I'm saying 15, is Casey should buy a PlayStation 4. You hold a button and
fly around the screen. Like,
I know, that was fun. I used to love going like up on the mountain and watching everyone fight, and I'm just hanging there by my sword, having a good time. And then I jump back down and slash a few people, and then I go hide up on my, on top of a, an antenna or something.
You're going to need to hide on top of an antenna if you keep pushing this line of thinking. the spell casting in Final Fantasy 15 is asinine. Like, it is, the fact that friendly fire is on in that with the spell casting too makes it even worse.
Don't you like using 13 different weapons for your main character?
Gotta switch it up.
So bad.
That was awesome.
Oh, gosh.
So I will say, though, I actually have probably a real life, like, in practice example of a game that I'm giving a second chance to literally right now. Paper Mario Color Splash is a hell of a video game, and I think it was a little bit of where I was... When I first played Paper Mario Color Splash, the sting of Sticker Star was way fresher, because that game's still a pile of crap. But I played like an hour or two of Color Splash, and just, I hated the combat, like did not like enjoyed the whimsy of that game, but did not enjoy anything else. I was talking to a couple people who are really big fans of that game, and they kind of convinced me that, like, okay, like, you got to go back in, you have to change it to like the pro control style, because ostensibly, the basic controls in that game are purposefully made by the developers to be so easy, like a child could do it, which my kid kind of can. but if you do turn on the pro controls, and it's basically like one of my issues with that game was you would select a card to do an attack.
It eliminates like a whole line of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the pro controls, it's basically like, instead of having to go through all these multi-steps, it's just you take the card, you can paint it if it's not painted, and then you fling it in an attack. Like, it's much more streamlined. And I don't know if there's any other specific examples of how that control scheme changes the game, but I changed to it as soon as I could. I have been just really, really enjoying that game. I'm a couple hours in, I think. I think I'm about to get, like, the first... I think there's, like, four... shines or whatever the hell, the paint stars. I'm getting close to getting the first one. I've been kind of playing a level or two here or there with my son in my lap. He goes absolute batshit bonkers during battles. At the end of them, I get a raucous applause. It's just been a really enjoyable game to play. I think Color Splash is a game that we should do an episode on, because that game's really, really good.
Don't need to tell me twice. That game kicks ass, man. I love it.
I wanted to come to Switch, actually. Like, I don't necessarily want to go back to play it on Wii U, but man, I would love to have the game portably. Like, so, I do think it's a very attractive game, and I wanted to play it. Like, I just wasn't interested in an end of life Wii U title at the time.
I don't think it would translate to Switch that well. I think it's very dependent on Wii U controls. But I mean, they've ported pretty much every other Wii U game that falls into that category to Switch. So
yeah, that's true.
Who knows?
Well, I feel like everyone's had an agenda tonight, and Jordan's going to continue his, which is pushing the 3DS.
Yeah, I definitely want to push this title, because I've been thinking about it a lot. These games, Atlas games go on sale on the 3DS every couple of months or so. There's a good Atlas games just go on sale regularly wherever they are, I suppose. But I've been noticing the 3DS sales a lot. Dave and I picked up a couple of Etrian Odyssey games, and speaking of Etrian Odyssey, Persona Q is the game that I want to give a second chance to. I have it downloaded on my 3DS. I probably bought it like half price or something. I think I got about maybe 40% of the way through, maybe halfway through before I gave up my playthrough. So Persona Q, for those who don't know, it's a game starring the cast of Persona 3 and Persona 4. In addition to a couple of original characters, and it's basically an Etrian Odyssey dungeon crawler type game, where you're drawing in a map on the bottom screen and kind of doing a first person turn-based RPG style exploration and combat on the top screen. It's fun. It's got the kind of Persona charm and character interactions that you like from those games, but it has that brutal difficulty that the Etrian Odyssey games are known for. And I think it was a little bit too much for me, maybe for the time I was playing it, but I got to, I think, maybe the third dungeon or something like that, and I just kept getting wiped, and I found the grinding not very effective. Like, I was fighting a lot of battles, but only getting, like, a very meager amount of experience, dropping the difficulty, even putting on the easiest difficulty. It's not easy. It's slightly less challenging. If you play it on normal or hard, I think it's a very, very difficult game. I really like Persona 3, 4, and 5. I haven't played the spinoffs, the dancing spinoffs, but I do like this Persona Q game. I do think about going back to it. The second one reviewed quite well. I think Donald reviewed that one for us. He really enjoyed the second one, which adds a Persona 5 cast. You kind of choose at the beginning of Persona Q if you want to start with the Persona 3 characters and protagonist, or the Persona 4 ones. I like that element. I wish that maybe the grinding was a little bit more effective, where the game wasn't so hard. There's something about the combat that I wanted to point out. Rather than in the Persona games, when you hit an enemy's weakness or you get a critical attack, you get an extra turn effectively, or you knock that enemy out for a turn. In Persona Q, that doesn't happen. Instead, you go into your character gets a boost, or you go into boost mode, which just makes your next attack not cost any magic points, or SSP, I think, as they're called in the game. So I felt like you weren't rewarded as much for identifying and striking enemy weaknesses. So that element kind of detracted from it a little bit for me as well. But I do want to see this one through, just because I think I did make a fair bit of progress and do like the characters. So Persona Q is a game I do want to go back to. Any of you gentlemen played Persona Q?
Yeah, it's actually funny. I played Persona Q before I played any Etrian Odyssey games. So
okay.
I got in and I loved it. And this was even before I played Persona 3. So mostly the cast that I was playing with, was Persona 4 based. So it'd probably be more interesting now having actually played Persona 3. But it was one of those games. It's so funny because I think back to when I played it, and I played it for 70 hours. And it was one of those that I just truly, I was like, man, I can't believe I played that game for 70 hours. Like, it totally didn't feel that way. I just enjoyed it the whole time. And, I don't remember really running into any major points of like not or frustration, you know, with having to grind or anything. But it's funny because I went back afterwards and I got Etrian Odyssey 4 thinking like, oh, I loved Persona Q. Like I liked the dungeon crawling and sort of making the map and everything as I went in. And that I ran into, I just like got brick walled so hard. Like I remember yeah. I was like, Jesus Christmas. Why can't I do
Etrian
this?
Etrian Odyssey 4. The opening of Etrian Odyssey 4 is freaking
brutal.
Yeah,
man, it bent me over big time. And I remember I was like, and then like how you sort of make your own characters in there too. It was just sort of like, and I fell off the edge with that. But yeah, Persona Q I loved. And I never went back and played Persona Q 2 again, sort of like you were saying with Color Splash, sort of a end of the life cycle 3DS game, you know what I mean? Like, and
very
like,
much so.
Yeah. I mean, not even the 3DS was already dead.
And I haven't played, I mean, I played a little of 5, but
that
again,
came out less than a year ago.
That's crazy.
Is that right?
July 2019.
That's crazy.
Yeah, craziness.
It was basically the last 3DS game of note.
Yeah, right.
I have experience with Persona Q, but I prefer the Etrian Odyssey games. If I had to recommend, Etrian Odyssey Untold 2 is still my favorite in the series.
Yeah, I recently downloaded that on a sale. I can't remember if you grabbed that one as well. Did you? I think we're gonna do an Untold 2 episode at some point if you guys are interested. I like the Untold games a lot because they add a little bit more story. They're a little bit more directed if you want to play them that way, or you can just make your own party and play them like a standard Etrian Odyssey game. So that choice is nice.
Yeah, I would be down for when I played Untold, I did it with a created party.
Yeah.
Or when I played Untold 2, I did Untold 1 with the story.
Okay.
I didn't like Untold 1 as much.
Yeah.
If I had to say, probably my favorite Etrian Odysseys are Untold 2, 4, and Nexus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grabbed Untold 2. Purchased it, just haven't downloaded it yet. I gotta take something off my 3DS to get it on. So.
Like, Untold 2, I mean, Etrian Odyssey is just a weird series, because it seems to be almost like when you play it, and like what mindset you're in. Because I think 4, like 4, I will agree, like, that opening is just freaking brutal.
It's so hard.
But I got past that, like, that was my entry point into the series, was Etrian Odyssey 4 on 3DS. And I got past that, and then just love that game, and then the kind of whenever a new Etrian Odyssey game has come out, even Etrian Mystery Dungeon, I have gotten it right away and played a bunch of it, but definitely Untold 2. That's where it's at.
Like I've played a lot of Etrian games, and I think that's why probably another reason why I want to play Persona Q again, because I've played and finished, you know, 3 or 4 Etrian games after playing Persona Q and giving up on it. So I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I'm a little more seasoned or more of a veteran of the series now, and I can go back and take another stab at it. So yeah, Persona Q is a game I'm going to come back to at some point. And Casey, I'm glad to hear that you played it all the way through and enjoyed it.
Yeah, it looks like it's up to me to wrap up the discussion for the evening, and I'm backing away from my screen a little bit because I'm sure Jordan's going to punch me right through it when I bring this game.
Don't worry, Jordan. You brought backup.
You put this in the right category, because if you talked about this during the first half of the episode, we'd have a problem. You or Casey both. Now we're good. So, you're right here.
Yeah. So the one I'm bringing up, I'm willing to give it a second chance because technically it is a game on paper I should enjoy. And this is Octopath Traveler. So this is, the game has everything, like I said, on paper, it has everything I could want. Made by the people at Square. It's got good combat, it's got beautiful music, the visuals are terrific. I could not get past how poorly structured the story is. It is awful. Like, I completely fell off the rails. I was getting mad every time I picked up a new character because I'm like, acknowledge their existence. Like, you guys are just like, you don't even know you're in the same party. You're just walking along and there's this guy. Oh, he's walking in the same direction I am. I guess I'll tag along for his story, but I won't acknowledge what's going on in the least. It was just 8 separate stories and they all just happened to be walking in the same direction. So I could not get past that.
I have advice for you. Play Octopath Traveler again. Whenever you get to a cutscene, I believe you hit the plus button. It'll say skip. Skip it.
Yeah.
And then when you go into the menu, there's like a 3-sentence description of what that scene was.
Read that. That's pretty much all you need. Move on. It's just...
Yep.
Yeah.
But what about all the excessive grinding you need to do to keep all your teammates around the same level?
But, like, that's fun, because the combat's really enjoyable. There's a lot of shit to explore on the overworld. The music is gorgeous.
Yeah, but the dungeons were pretty bland.
Yeah, I mean, the dungeons are kind of basic in Final Fantasy VII Remake too, but you don't hear me complaining.
Yeah.
Hold on, have you talked about Final Fantasy Remake?
At least it has a story worth experiencing.
That is a fair point. But seriously, because I think with Octopath Traveler and the dungeons being bland, I totally get that as well. I think my treatise on RPG dungeons is that, like, if they're gonna be bad, go bland as opposed to overcomplicated. And I think Octopath Traveler goes bland and doesn't go overcomplicated. But I do like there are aspects of that game that are just transcendental for me, and that's the combat is so much fun. The music, that's one of the best soundtracks in recent memory. I love the graphical presentation. The job stuff is really enjoyable, and that's part of the when you do get to a point where you kind of need to grind a little bit. There are like hidden job classes you can go find. I think there's multiple. I forget exactly how many.
Four hidden ones.
Yeah. And I think there's like getting other variants. It's been a couple years since I played through it, and it was for review, so it was in a tight window.
I guess the other thing too is that the main whoever you choose off the bat, you can never take out of the party, right?
No, you can.
I thought they were stuck.
Yeah, I think the person you pick at the very beginning is stuck throughout the whole game. So your party is usually unbalanced because the person that you're stuck with is way higher than the rest of the party.
I don't know if that's the case for the whole thing, but maybe I'm mistaken.
Okay,
Jordan?
So I'm not going to answer that question. Yeah, I'm tired of all the bashing of this game.
So you can't change the main character. Okay.
I'm going to tell you that. Your complaints about the game, some of them are totally founded, but to complain about poor dungeon design, go back to Final Fantasy 4 or 5 or 6 and tell me that the dungeons are interesting. And these are still some of the great... Chrono Trigger's dungeons aren't all that interesting, but the music and the visuals
Bravely
make
Default
that game.
Bravely Default 2's dungeon, I don't know if you... I know you guys talked about the demo. That dungeon kind
of
sucked.
Yeah, it was pretty bland.
All of the Bravely Default dungeons are... they're known for being
cookie
horrible
cutter.
Yeah, they're the exact same as this game. Like, I don't know, does anyone play a JRPG for good dungeons? This isn't a Zelda game. Yeah. Like,
well, I'm not saying that was my biggest complaint. My biggest complaint was that I started with the Huntress. I can't what's her
it
name
doesn't
it's just
matter
yeah
yeah she's awesome so
get the
she
hell
is
out here.
She was awesome.
Yeah,
it would be nice if her story, you know, didn't take 15 hours to get to chapter 2 of her story. Like, there was literally, you get her introduction, and her story was gone. There was no character development of her. There was nothing until you get to the point where now you get to go back to her story after going through 7 other stories.
That's a totally fair point.
That was my biggest problem.
The story fragmentation is definitely an issue, and I hope, you know, if and when a sequel to this game comes out, which I think
hopefully not.
They're definitely gonna fix it by that
time.
Dude,
it sold like 2 million copies.
By
like,
that
that's
time,
happening.
Casey will have been banished from the podcast. It's fine. Yeah. you're talking about a game that it's worth playing for two elements alone, and that's the combat and the music. This is the greatest combat system devised in a turn-based RPG, and the dungeons are bland. But by the time you get to that boss fight, like, what they throw at you, the kind of strategy you need to use.
The boss fights are really fun.
The music that plays around the boss fight, it's absolutely astoundingly good. Yeah. I think this is a game where you could tell
some of the sprite work.
I think they were trying to heighten certain aspects, right? I don't think that the 8 stories is necessarily something you're like trying to sell too much. It's just a different way of doing it. But if you think about just how much kind of care and attention went into those boss fights and this combat system, that they've kind of taken the Bravely system and iterated on it in a meaningful way. We've talked about the music as well. I think if you chose a certain character as your first one, you had a better experience with the game than other people did. So I chose the professor, I can't remember his name. Cyrus, I think.
Cyrus.
He by far is the best character, I think, especially early on, because he gets the different elemental spells, right? And they can hit multiple enemies. So it's very easy to stun or break your opponents when you have Cyrus in the party. I think his passive ability, it actually lets him reveal one of the enemy's weaknesses at the beginning of combat. So not only is his own skills are very useful, but just the fact that he can hit multiple opponents with a fire spell or an ice spell or a lightning spell or something like that makes him invaluable. So I had him in my party basically the whole game, forced or not. I wanted him to be there because he was the best one. I think you started with one of the maybe weaker characters, David. I think Aneth is fun to use, but I don't think she's all that useful necessarily. And so I think it's very possible that...
I started with Hannet, and I thought she was fine.
Yeah,
she gets very powerful.
She becomes powerful, but I think early on she's not as great as until you've like saved up a bunch of like interesting or useful monsters, right? At any rate, so Cyrus is really good. I think the warrior, I can't remember his name. He's really, really powerful too.
Ulbrich?
Just some characters. Ulbrich, like... I just feel like if you have them in your party early, like I remember playing the demo and I got a sense from the demo of which kind of characters were stronger, which ones I wanted in my party. So I kind of crafted my main game playthrough based on my demo experience. And I went and recruited the party I wanted right away. And when I had them, I felt really powerful. I felt like I could swap in like two characters that are weaker and keep my two stronger characters. I'm going to be fine because I've got that balance. So I never really had to grind.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm like I said, I'm totally down for giving it another try. Like, it could be one of those things where I was focusing on the story too much at the time.
Can you stop sighing every time? You're like, I did. It's like I have a gun to your head and I'm forcing you to play this game again.
I mean, PTSD. The one good thing is. We never did have an episode dedicated to Octopath.
Yes, it's time.
The way it ought to be.
Because the game came out and just everybody hated it because they played like 2 hours.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, God. Just play it properly. I remember hearing stories of people trying to do like, okay, so I'm playing, I've got chapter one of this care of Cyrus. I'm going to do chapter one of Cyrus. Then the next chapter will do two and then three and four. I'll just play all Cyrus all the way through. Oh, I have to grind 100 hours to do it this way. Play the game properly. Like it's supposed to do all the chapter ones.
You put that story away for 8 hours and remember what happened and then come back and play it like you ought to, dang it.
Open the menu and there's like for each chapter, there's like 10 like little paragraphs, like 2 to 3 sentences each. If you forget the story, just read them.
Goes to town.
You don't even need to watch cutscenes.
With friends.
Just...
Well, Jordan, I just want to tell you that the feelings you're feeling now is exactly how I feel every time someone argues with me about Final Fantasy VIII.
Who's doing that?
Oh, people do it.
I was gonna say
Final Fantasy VIII is not my favorite Final Fantasy, but it's fine. Like. Yeah. You do you, man. I really like 5. Like,
you can understand why someone would think Final Fantasy VIII is the best Final Fantasy. You can play that game and understand that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can play Octopath and say, like, this game sucks. Like, it sucks? Like, have you gotten in a single combat encounter?
Quest 64 did you have and on, Octopath Traveler.
Did you have down. At least one game will be
shut
good.
The hell up. We're actually going to do that. We're going to have a contest to see which one we actually enjoy playing more, but man, if you play the game on mute and you close your eyes during the combat, Octopath sucks. I'm sorry, it just does. Like, if you ignore the two best elements of it and focus on how it's 8 separate short stories, yeah, it sucks, but I don't know.
There's only one way to settle this, and I think it's going to be a playthrough one day.
I think it's taking Casey off the mage.
I would be super down. For replaying Octopath Traveler.
Yep, Quest 64, boys. I'm looking forward to it.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol.
get going.
All right, well, we're running a little long, but we got to get our last call in. So the topic for tonight is what game did you avoid but absolutely loved when you finally got around to playing it?
I glanced at this earlier, and I have one. Xenoblade Chronicles.
Damn you, Neil! That's mine!
I was thinking about it for a little bit, because I'm like, what was I resistant of? And because of the weird debacle with Xenoblade coming out, you know, across different regions in different order, by the time it came out in North America, I just was like, well, you know, it's exclusive to GameStop, I'll just pick it up. And I didn't play it for a while, and at that point, like, people had already imported from Europe. People were like, it's the greatest RPG ever. I'm like, it can't be that good. Then I finally sat down and played it, and I was like, this is a damn good video game. And I really, really dug it. And I was kind of resistant of it for the first couple hours. And it really, that's when I kind of settled on, like, that intro, like, first 3-4 hours of Xenoblade Chronicles is probably one of my favorite introductions to a video game ever.
It's got a meaningful story. The exploration feels very satisfying. Like, it's the music and the visuals, like, you know, it's not an HD or anything. Like, hell, I played it on a new 3DS, but I can still, I can still appreciate going from all the different areas on the Bionis to the Mechonis and feeling like, wow, like, this is a really, truly developed world. And, like, I want to kind of lose myself in it. I felt like just kind of wandering aimlessly and, you know, finding materials or fighting battles or running away from, you know, enemies that were way, way higher level than I was. Like, all of it feels very, I don't know, it just you get an attachment to it, I guess.
How about you, Casey? Do you got an RPG that you were...
I was trying to think about this, and it's so funny because I have, like, this question as far as, like, general games would be Tesla vs. Lovecraft. I remember I got that code, and I just remember I was like, man, that game, that name sounds so stupid. I don't want anything to do with it. And then I ended up playing it, and it's, like, an unbelievably great game. But as far as RPGs go, I was trying to rack my brain. Speaking of Xenoblade, it's funny because that was sort of when I got back into gaming, you know, where I specifically, like, Nintendo gaming after, like, a little bit of a lull with college. I remember I got my Wii U, and I was like, man, do I want to play Xenoblade, or do I want to get Bravely Default? And I was like, and then I ended up going Xenoblade, and then I didn't play Bravely Default for, like, you know, quite some time, because it's one of those, like, oh, beat a really long RPG, don't really want to, like, rail another one right afterwards. So I ended up actually taking quite a bit of time to get around to Bravely, and then the rest is history. I love that game, too. But, yeah, I mean, I can't think of one, like, I actively avoided. I mean, I guess with something like Ys 8, that would be something I would have avoided because of, you know, just being an action RPG. But I ended up reviewing it for the site, and, like, that game, oh my god, like, that's like a top 5 Switch game for me. You know, like, that game's so good. But,
it's great.
Yeah. David, you still haven't played it, right?
No, I own it.
Game, oh my, so good.
I love the world building in that game. Like, you acquire the different characters and they join your town and they offer their that's something I really love about RPGs, when you explore and you gain, your town grows, your family grows, and with it, that's kind of that's a progression mechanic, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not just leveling up, it's not just stats going up. People are actually, you're building a community out. I just love that element. And then they're giving you different side quests and stuff to do. Like, it makes the world feel alive, I guess. And Ys 8 does a really good job.
And the music, again, I'm so good.
It's great. Yeah, it's really. I mean, and it's some of the combat music and the boss fight music is so upbeat and, like, rock and roll type. You know, it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got an acquired taste for action RPGs. So it's. I guess it's one of those things where, like, there's a few that I really love, and then the rest I kind of just avoid. And that's kind of where mine came in with. I actually did actively avoid this game. It's Witcher 3. When it came out, I was like, I don't know. At the time, I was just like, medieval game, I don't give a shit. I'm playing Skyrim or something probably at the time.
For the 40th time
and,
in a row.
And buddy...
Yeah,
that's right. And I knew it was a long game too, so that was the other thing. Like, if I'm not gonna like it, I don't want to devote that. If I'm not gonna play the whole thing, I'm not gonna bother. And I had one of my best friends here. He owned it and he played it and he kept going on and on about how great it was. And he put it in my hands when I was at his house one time. He's like, "No, you have to take it home." I'm like, "Nah, I don't want to play this. And then it was actually that copy. Eventually he finally like said like, no, take it and play it. Like, come on. And there was a lull or something. And so I took it off his hands and then I was hooked for a couple months there. So yeah, I actually did avoid it and refuse to play it. And when I finally gave in, it's one of my favorite games.
I mean, if anything we've mentioned on the podcast, that was the greatest mistake you ever made, was not playing that game when it first came out. Like, I'm glad you got to play it eventually and we talked about it on the podcast, yeah. But yeah, Witcher 3 is, I mean, that's an all-timer, right? Like, it's a definitive 10. The DLC is probably some of the best DLC I've ever played in my life, and yeah. So good. Yeah, I mean, all three games we've talked about here that we avoided but eventually loved, like, it's just the funny thing. Like, there's so many games to play. It's easy nowadays, especially, to say, oh, I'll just play it later. I'll wait for it to go on sale. And then when you do pick it up, and you don't have the hype around it, you don't have everyone talking about it anymore, you kind of get to experience these games in a different way compared to experience them at launch, right? Like, everyone except for Casey, like, we're all playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, and everyone's getting hyped up about it. Everybody's talking about it. I've been basically trying to stay, like, I'll post on Twitter, but never read anything on Twitter right now, because I don't want to see anyone talking about that game. I really want to be as unspoiled about it as possible, even though it's a remake of a game we've all played, obviously. But it just feels so different to me. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I'm glad we were kind of in lockstep with Xenoblade Chronicles. Like, I didn't play it on Wii because I wasn't playing RPGs or I wasn't really playing a lot of Wii games. So I was excited when it got announced for a new 3DS, because I picked up a new 3DS, but there wasn't really a reason to have one necessarily. Except for that game, right? So I think I probably picked them up on the same day. I think I had the red new 3DS, and I picked up that game and I played through it. I was enthralled, and I did regret not playing it on Wii, just because I enjoyed that game so much.
Yeah, I actually only finished it on new 3DS. I feel like I mentioned this. I mentioned this on one of the Patreon Super Mario 35th Anniversary podcasts. That's a teaser that I think this will come out before anything about it is mentioned. But woo! My Wii died late in life, and I was about 30 hours into Xenoblade Chronicles when it died, yeah. And I lost my save, and I was like, well, never finishing that game. And then I reviewed it on 3DS and really dug it on that. And it's gonna be weird, because I'll probably wind up playing, I think I might wind up playing Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition on Switch a lot more on the TV, which will be like a weird way of experiencing that game, because I played through it on a
tiny,
on a
little
highly compromised portable version.
Yeah, you almost have to do that.
The fact that new 3DS like actually runs Xenoblade is still incredible. Like,
it is,
props to Monster Games who did that port. It shouldn't work at all, and it does.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Anyway, I've never played Witcher 3. Why should I play Witcher 3?
Yes. If you want to lose like 100 so plus hours of your life.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's one of those
ones. You can't even.
I was going to say, that's one of those ones I played a little bit. It's funny. My sister, I always make fun of her because like she never beats any video games. And that was one she like got all into, and I played a little bit of it. And I remember, actually, it's funny. It's like David, she loves Skyrim too. It's like, I feel like you guys like the same games. But it was
David with a wig.
You're not my sister.
Knew it.
It's one of those ones where there's just almost too much stuff to do. I remember playing it, and you get like that, like, all right, that's where I need to go for the main quest, but there's literally 4 million cool, interesting things I could do along the way. And it's sort of similar to Zelda, right, with Breath of the Wild, where it was like, I'm gonna go here, and then you end up doing a million different things. But to me, Zelda is worth investing all of that time, where The Witcher, it's like, this is cool, but I'm not attached to this game enough that I want to pour that much time into it.
It is, yeah, it's definitely a huge, huge ask if you start playing The Witcher 3 and you plan to finish it. Like, you have to decide very early on what percentage of the game you actually want to see, because
it's 100 hours just to finish it. Yeah. That's avoiding all the side quests.
Yes, that's purposely not doing major side quests,
I think it's definitely a game that I will eventually get on Switch, because I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah.
And nothing but good things about that Switch port too.
And you got to play the DLC too. The DLC is amazing.
Yeah.
Alrighty, Jordan, how about you take us out for the episode?
Sounds good. Okay, so thank you, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed hearing us talk about some games that we didn't necessarily have fondness for, or maybe we're hoping to get back to at some point. You know, obviously, it's a very busy time with a lot of RPGs now, but we're trying to carve out, get rid of some of the backlog as well, now that we're all stuck at home for a little while. So 2020 might be the year of the backlog clear. So we're looking forward to that, I guess. I want to thank Casey and Neil for joining us. Casey, where can people find you?
You can catch me on the Talk Nintendo podcast every week. You can find that on Twitter, Talk Nintendo Pod. And yeah, we talk about games, and we do it every week. And food. We talk about food, too.
We talk about especially Wingstop, right? We recorded, obviously, our last episode with this Casey and Perry. And they're going to probably regularly join us maybe every month or so. We're hoping to talk about maybe a Pokemon game coming up soon. Neil, where can people find your stuff, your content? Where can people get at you?
You can go over to NintendoReport.com. I do some things there. Currently, we're doing Mario Spinoff Madness, a 68-game tournament that is currently in round two. Who do you guys have in going to the final four?
I think I had I don't remember my final four. I remember my final two, and I think I had Mario Kart 8 versus Captain Toad.
I think Captain Toad's very optimistic, but Mario Kart 8 is an absolute ringer for this tournament.
Yeah. I wanted one of each. I wanted one long shot and one sure thing in the finals.
Yeah, and your other final four, you had Mario and Rabbids. Okay. That's a bold pick, too, I think. And then Paper Mario.
Yeah.
Which Paper Mario is the number one seed in that bracket?
Yeah, there you go. See, I'm taking a little bit from both. I love Mario plus Rabbids. I think it's a great game. I hope they announce a sequel. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. And Neil and I we've recorded. You alluded to a Patreon exclusive podcast that we're doing for Mario's 35th anniversary. We recorded an episode on Super Mario Brothers 2 recently, which will be actually free to Patreon patrons, I think, or free to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I think. And I recorded Super Mario Brothers 1 with Perry over at Talk Nintendo. So I think that first episode, whenever I edit it, we'll go over to go up on the Talk Nintendo feed. I think at least the first four episodes will probably be free to everybody as an incentive to then listen to the rest and become a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah, so we've recorded a couple episodes here. I think I'll join Neil again for another episode down the line as well. So look forward to those too. We've got some good upcoming episodes. We're going to be talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake soon.
Yep.
If you weren't already given that hint by Neil mentioning it every five seconds.
Wait, what game?
right?
Casey, you should buy Final Fantasy VII Remake so you can join for the episode.
Casey will be on the episode. He'll just be drooling or cursing.
I watched a lot of really great streams on my new TV.
That's right. Exactly. I'll be happy if you make one of those two purchases, actually, and just wait for your PS5 if you want to get the TV first.
You're a bad influence.
You can find... I know. we've got a few upcoming reviews for the Thirsty Mage YouTube channel and for our Thirsty Mage website as well. I'm working on a review of Sakura Wars for PS4. It's a kind of an interesting combination of mecha-style combat, almost like a Musou style of combat with dating sim and visual novel elements as well. But it does seem to come together, so I've got a review for that coming out in about a week and a half, 2 weeks or so. We've got a preview on the Thirsty Mage website and on Thirsty Mage YouTube channel, so you can check out those as well. David, do we have any other reviews coming up soon?
Sunless Sea.
By the time you're listening to this, the Sunless Sea, it probably won't be out. It'll just be out, I think, when this podcast comes out.
It's the 23rd, right? It comes out?
It's a week, yeah, week and from this, today.
And we're recording on the 17th.
That's like a week.
So maybe, yeah, it might be, if you're listening to this the day it came out, then it'll probably be a day or so, because I think it's a Tuesday and we release on a Sunday. So one review that will be out is Convoy will be on the site if you want to. That'll be there by the time you're listening to this.
Sounds good. Yeah, so if you enjoyed the episode, you know, we'd love if you could subscribe on your podcast app of choice. Leave us a review. Let us know what you thought.
Five stars only.
Email the... That's right. Yes, but especially when Casey's on the episode, so we know to keep him around. We'd love to hear from listeners. You know, if there's games you want us to play or talk about, you can email David, David@thethirstymage.com. You can find our Twitter account @thethirstymage. I'm @riskman64. If you want to follow me, David's @filteredgamer. Neil is @nron10. Casey is @case_jets. Is that right?
Yep.
Got it right this time. Yeah, so I hope you all enjoyed listening to the episode. We enjoyed talking about some games we're never going to revisit again, but games we also do want to come back to when we find some time for them. I know a lot of us are playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. That episode is going to be an interesting one, too. I'm not sure what we're going to do next week. We're going to maybe talk about a Game Boy Color RPG. We'll see. But the plan's kind of up in the air, so you'll have to see what pops up on your podcast feed in the next week or so. David, how did I do?
Professional as always.
Oh, thank you very much. I tried to check off all the boxes. Yes, so with that, we'll leave you. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
See you later. Bye.